Good afternoon and welcome to today's Innovative Ideas podcast. My name is Paul Howard and I'm the director and a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute's Center for Medical Progress. Our guest this afternoon is Professor Frank Lichtenberg, the Courtney C. Brown Professor of Business at Columbia University's Graduate School of Business, as well as a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research. Professor Lichtenberg's research has examined how the introduction of new technology arising from research and development affects the productivity of companies, industries, and nations. Recently, he has performed studies of the impact of pharmaceutical innovation on longevity, the effect of computers on productivity in business and government organizations, and the consequences of takeovers and leveraged buyouts for efficiency and employment. Professor Lichtenberg joins us today to talk about the recent patent expiration for Lipitor, the generic name atorvastatin calcium, the world's best-selling drug, and how we should understand the role of patents in fostering innovation and, at least in the case of newer medicines, improving human health. Frank, welcome to today's Innovative Ideas podcast.
Thank you, Paul.
Frank, I'd like to start out just by referencing the patent expiration for Lipitor, again, generic name atorvastatin. It seems to be, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, but as a general matter, pharmaceuticals are relatively unique in the healthcare space, unlike surgeries, which are always expensive because they require very sophisticated training and very sophisticated and highly paid physicians to perform those surgeries, or sophisticated medical devices like MRIs that are very expensive to design and produce. Patent expiration ensures that the knowledge that's embodied in pharmaceuticals becomes much cheaper after those patents expire, and that both is a boon for public health. Those drugs then become cheap, pennies on the dollar, and at the same time, those companies that had formerly held those patents, which are basically limited monopolies, have to turn around and try and find another drug to replace that one or two, or in the case of Lipitor, I guess, $12 billion global blockbuster. So having said that, how would you characterize the interplay between patents, getting the right term of a patent, but also the role of patents in driving innovation and in public health?
Well, that is a very deep and multifaceted question, Paul, but I'll do the best I can in trying to address it. First of all, I agree with you that pharmaceuticals are unique in the sense that they are probably much easier to imitate than other medical innovations, and in fact, innovations in other fields as well. Which is why patent protection is more important to the pharmaceutical industry than it is to many other industries. Because once someone has the formula, then they are going to be able to replicate that invention quite easily. So patents are necessary for stimulating innovation in this field. That has been recognized for a long time. The necessity of providing incentives for innovation, and that is really what the patent system is all about. In fact, U.S. patent law is based on a part of the Constitution where the founding fathers recognized that limited monopolies, or monopolies for a limited period of time, need to be provided in order for inventors to engage in the costly process of innovation. However, it's not appropriate or ideal for those monopolies to last forever. That is what we're trying to do. What I think the government and society is trying to accomplish is to balance the creation of innovations with access to innovation. And so the patent creates an incentive to innovate, whereas the expiration of the patent, generally, which occurs about 13 years after the drug has been on the market, provides much less expensive access to many patients. And so it's an attempt to strike a balance between innovation and access. I don't think that we are absolutely sure that we're striking the correct balance. That's a very difficult issue, but I think that it is moving in the right direction.
And I think the importance here was captured very nicely in something you said to me a couple of years ago. And you said, you know, the way you improve health is, first of all, you try and move as many people as you can up to the current standard of care. And then innovation extends or raises the standard of care or the possibility of treatments that you can give to those patients. So you're at once trying to get everybody to the best place you can today and create better treatments for them tomorrow. And patents, I think the way you just described, there's a nice balance of that. So we get the cheap generics when the patents expire, and then the companies have to turn around and try and figure out what's the next better way that we're going to try and cure AIDS, attack cancer, lower someone's cholesterol to prevent heart attacks, that kind of thing.
Yes, that's right. You know, I think, for example, some healthcare reforms like expanding coverage to uninsured people are an attempt to provide better access to existing medical care. Similarly, programs that try to get physicians to comply with standards, with best practice care, also are trying to say, let's get everyone up to kind of the knowledge frontier. And that will certainly go a certain way towards improving population health. But in the long run, in order to have continuous improvement in population health, we really need to push out the medical frontier to develop new and better technologies and therapies. That's what the system of intellectual property protection is trying to achieve as well.
One of the most tremendous gains in population health, at least in the U.S. in the last 50 or 60 years, I think has been in the area of cardiovascular disease. I was looking at the stats after Lipitor lost patent last week, and I saw the CDC, it said between 1950 and 1999, there was a 60% decline in U.S. cardiovascular mortality, which is really astonishing considering that for the past century, cardiovascular disease has been the number one killer in the nation, I think for every year except one in 1918. I don't know what was happening that year. Maybe it was global pandemic flu, but tremendous decline over the last 50 years. Some of that is undoubtedly due to population health, improved nutrition, more people stopping smoking, that kind of thing. But the data went on to point out there's even been a significant decline after 1999, which I would, I think smoking rates have hovered at around 20% in the U.S. for the last several decades, so it can't necessarily attribute to that. You've done a lot of research looking at the ways that innovation can improve health and even, at least for certain chronic disease, lower total healthcare costs by substituting for things like hospitalizations. Could you talk a little bit about the gains that you've seen in your research, particularly on new medicines and cardiovascular disease?
I think that there certainly have been very significant gains in cardiovascular disease, as well as cerebrovascular disease, that is, strokes. Those are two of the disease states where we've seen the largest improvements in longevity and mortality. And I think it has been established that that is due to a very high degree to improved treatment. For example, treatment of heart attack, the prevention and treatment of heart attack, has improved quite dramatically. By the way, not all of the behavioral trends are favorable. We have seen, certainly in the last 20 years, a significant rise in obesity, which is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease. And so, in fact, that makes the gains in cardiovascular mortality even more impressive, because in some sense people are at higher risk than they used to be. I think that, as I said, numerous scholars have pointed to new treatments as a primary cause of the reduction in cardiovascular mortality. Moreover, not only has mortality, which is sort of the best measured health outcome, has that improved, but we have also seen reductions in some other healthcare costs, primarily the cost of hospitalization. I did a study several years ago which looked at cardiovascular hospitalization in 20 OECD countries over about a 10-year period. And what I found was that the countries that had adopted new cardiovascular drugs the most rapidly had the largest declines in cardiovascular mortality. So by using newer cardiovascular drugs such as statins, there are savings elsewhere in the healthcare system. Those savings are often overlooked when doing cost-effectiveness analysis of new therapies, but I think that they are quite important. And in fact, in my study, I found that the decline in cardiovascular hospitalization expenditure was over three times as great as the increase in cardiovascular pharmaceutical expenditure that resulted from the use of newer cardiovascular drugs.
Now, just a brief side point. When you talk about the value of newer medicines versus older medicines, is that because the newer medicines have more knowledge that is built into them in terms of the accuracy of the targets within the human body that they're impacting? What is it that's embodied in newer medicines that reflects those better outcomes?
that it's difficult to pin that down exactly, to know what it is precisely about the new medicines. But clearly, for one thing, we know that newer therapies do embody the knowledge that is generated by billions of dollars of research, both by the government, primarily through the National Institutes of Health, and through private industry, and that research leads to a much better understanding of fundamental biological processes, so that there are new mechanisms of action, new disease targets that were previously unrecognized or unaddressed. Moreover, newer therapies may also have better side effect profiles, which may, in fact, encourage adherence to medication. A big problem with medication is that someone may have a chronic disease, the doctor tells the person, you should be on the following medicine, and the person starts to take the medicine, but then discontinues use, perhaps because of side effects or other factors. My research suggests that, in fact, newer medicines do promote greater adherence. That is, people who are using newer drugs are more likely to adhere to the drugs and take them on a continuous basis, which does lead to better health outcomes.
That's very, very interesting. One issue that you spoke about a moment ago is this issue of, at least for some chronic diseases in your research, newer medicines appear to offset other kinds of healthcare costs. With the realization that innovation does improve health and may also reduce healthcare costs, you've got to recognize, or at least it seems to be we've recognized in the U.S., that the healthcare system doesn't necessarily reward innovations that could have the most impact on chronic diseases or that have the most potential to reduce overall healthcare costs. And this is getting us a little further afield in our topic of patents, but are there any policy choices, ideas that could improve the likelihood of the system adopting those innovations or improving rewards to providers that use them? Or is this, as you said a moment ago, maybe it's not just the system, but it's also innovations that are more patient-friendly in terms of adherence or having fewer side effects that really, over time, improve the way that the health system utilizes those innovations?
I think appropriately rewarding innovation, that is a challenging thing, in part because when people use a pharmaceutical product or another therapy, that the effects of that use may take quite a lot of time to fully develop. So, for example, a new drug may increase longevity, but that may take a number of years before the full effects of the new therapy to be well understood. Meanwhile, the provider of that product expects and I believe is entitled to be compensated in the short run, but the effects of that therapy may be relatively long run effects. So it is a rather deep problem that I think we are trying to grapple with in the healthcare system in general. Now, one possible solution is pay for performance, where essentially the payment or reimbursement for a product is conditional on what the outcomes of the use of that product are. This is beginning to be utilized in a variety of healthcare settings. For example, recently Germany basically introduced a pay-for-performance scheme for the cancer drug Avastin. And we have seen other instances of this, whereby the manufacturer of the drug will only be compensated, in that case by the German government or German hospitals, to the extent that patients' outcomes improve. So that in principle does seem like an attractive way to try to reward good performance and not encourage wasteful expenditure. But I think that this is really in its infancy. There are many problems of implementation, and it is really going to take quite a while for us to figure out how to do this in the correct manner.
I think that's very right, although I think that you mentioned Germany. I've also understood that in the UK for a couple of different, again, I think that it was with cancer drugs, companies did in fact agree to a provision where they would be reimbursed, I guess, at full price for patients who responded, but would not charge the government anything for patients who didn't respond. Perhaps that will become even more important as cancer therapy at least moves into more of a targeted or personalized approach where medicines are really designed for very particular subpopulations of particular cancers. I think that's an intriguing idea that's certainly out there right now and being tested, and we'll see how that develops. But I think just to sum it up here, I think we've got a little bit of a virtuous cycle of innovation involved with pharmaceuticals. It's very difficult to tell, you know, perhaps did you get the exact patent time life? Of course, the effective life of a patent depends on how long it takes for that particular product to be approved by the FDA and then come to market, how much time you have left. But it appears to be that the U.S. benefits from one of the highest generic utilization numbers in the world, I think approaching 80%, if not higher. And yet, at the same time, we also have a very vibrant, innovative pharmaceutical market. So perhaps we're striking something close to the right balance, if not the perfect balance.
I think that's right. And we've certainly seen a huge expansion in the generic industry, particularly in the last 25 or so years since the passage of the Hatch-Waxman Act, which made it much easier and less expensive for generic firms to enter the market. However, Congress did try to balance that easier entry of generic firms by restoring some of the patent life that was being used up by the FDA approval process. So the government tried to provide an appropriate balance again, between innovation and access.
Terrific. Well, that's a great note to conclude on. Frank, thanks very much for joining us today.
Okay. Thank you, Paul.